competitive shooting, tactical training. Yeah, actually, sometimes it does gel together. All that right now with Andrew Wright from Surefire. Welcome into Gun Talk Nation. This Gun Talk Nation is brought to you by Pyramid Air, Timney Triggers, ATN Optics, and Safari Land. Today on Gun Talk Nation, we've got Andrew Wright from Surefire. Andrew is an actual gun guy that's in the gun industry, because not everyone is. Welcome in, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, people know Surefire, but I kind of let in with the whole you're an actual gun guy, and we've been talking this morning, doing a little filming and shooting. You're someone who you shoot some competitively. You take classes. How'd you get into gun stuff?
That's a good question, man. I've always had an affinity for firearms ever since I was a little kid for some reason. I was a reservist in the Marine Corps, shot a little bit more there. But honestly, it was, I guess, my friend's group outside that was more into guns. And everyone was a little bit of a gun nut and had their own little, you know, a couple friends were into precision, a couple friends were into old weird, you know, World War II guns and whatnot. Yeah. And yeah, man, it just slowly trickled and kind of snowballed from there. Started at working at Surefire and made things a little bit, you know, more attainable. And yeah, man, I've always just been into shooting in general.
It's an interesting thing because people get into guns, either they grow up in it, but if you don't grow up in it, it's always interesting to me of like, well, how did you get there? Because it's not necessarily an easy thing to do. Did your family shoot or hunt or anything like that?
Not so much. My dad's best friend was a big gun nut. Okay. And so when we would hang out with him, it would always be at the Sporting Clays range.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I ever shot as a kid. And maybe that sparked it because I was real young when we would start going. And we've always shot Sporting Clays. And I still to this day shoot Sporting Clays with my dad pretty frequently. So, yeah, I think that's the first connection. But other than that, my family's not really a huge firearms family. I mean, they do a lot of outdoor stuff, but just not super into guns. It was really just me.
Well, and they'll say, well, and you guys are in California. Surefire is stationed in Southern California.
Yep.
So we go, Southern California, there's no gun culture there. There's no gun people there.
It's a huge gun culture. I mean, yeah. it's a gigantic market segment for firearms owners. I mean, any given weekend, I can shoot a USPSA match with several hundred good competitors. There's PRS matches. There's multi-gun matches. I mean, just everything under the sun in an hour circle from where we are in Orange County. And yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good active firearms market down there.
Yeah, it is. People, other places just kind of assume, oh, California, they don't like guns. I'm like, not really. There's a lot of gun people there. What lately, what have you been shooting? What have you been enjoying?
Yeah, so this year I started dabbling in some multi-gun competitions for my first time. So, you know, the girlfriend shoots this multi-gun match out in Arizona, Superstition Mystery Mountain.
Yeah.
And she's been doing it forever because of her dad. So she's been shooting that match like, you know, forever, literally. And so I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. So I bought a shotgun this year. I got some practices in, two local three gun matches. And then I was thrown into the fire out at Superstition, which was a lot of fun.
I feel like the shotgun part is the part that's the tricky part for most people when they go, okay, I'm going to do multi-gun. Mm-hmm. So, you know, AKA three gun. Mm-hmm. Seems like most people are, yeah, I can shoot a pistol or I've done a lot of that or and shooting an AR, you know, some sort of rifle. Good. Then it comes to the shotgun part. And I mean, shooting a shotgun, maybe not super difficult, but the running of the shotgun, reloading that part, is that part for you the weird part?
For everybody.
Yeah.
It depends on your division. You know, there are nowadays in open, the AK platforms like the Vepers and whatnot,
oh, sure.
And Dissident Arms.
Yeah, different.
They're magazine box fed shotguns where that manipulation portion is gone. But for me, I shot a division that they call stealth. It's very similar to TAC, but basically it's a two-fed shotgun. And yeah, that's a huge component is being able to load that shotgun fast and figuring out where to do it. And yeah, man, it's a whole other ball game. But yeah. Also, I mean, there's challenging pistol stuff and there's challenging rifle stuff at this particular match. I mean, we had a spinning mover at 300. There was steel out to 500 plus.
Wow.
there's a lot of variety. And then there's close-in stuff with the rifle as well. So you got to be able to do both.
Yeah.
And then with the shotgun, you have not only birdshot steel targets, but you also have some slug plates at semi-distance as well. So you got to kind of be able to do it all. Pistol, you know, you have some partial plate racks where they have no shoot plate rack in front of a partially exposed plate rack in the rear. So you need to have some pistol accuracy. I mean, it's a really well-rounded kind of combination of stages that they had set up. It was a lot of fun.
I know I've heard that's a great match.
It was amazingly well run. I've been to a decent amount of big matches. I mean, this was my first major match I ever shot, but I've been to a decent amount just through work and whatnot. And it was really, really well run. I mean, for 370 competitors, we were never really waiting on a stage. Like their scheduling and how it was a well-oiled machine. But Rio Salado, which is the range there,
huge.
They put on a lot of matches and they know what they're doing. And yeah, we'll be back out there. I mean, we were a sponsor of the match, a stage sponsor, and it was really well received, and it was awesome experience, man. And we'll be back out there next year for sure.
So I don't shoot a ton of matches, but one of the things I've done is go and shoot. They used to have the Midnight 3-Gun up in Oregon, and doing lights and lasers on guns, which was really eye-opening when you kind of figure out what works and what doesn't, and whether on your pistol or rifle. I don't know. I think the shotgun part was they try to keep it simple because it was kind of one of those matches where we want to get a lot of people there and just participating and that kind of thing. I remember in particular one was going prone to shoot some rifle targets that are 200, 300 yards out at night, and you've got the light, scout light, lighting up the targets. But without a suppressor, laying down in the Oregon desert, it gets interesting when you crank off rounds and things get dusty.
100%. I was just out a couple weeks ago at another match in Utah, Practical 2-Gun, P2G. It was sponsored by, the title sponsor was Cobalt Kinetics.
Okay.
It was actually at their home range. And they had some serious dust going on, man. I mean, it's a pretty new range that's cut into the desert. And so that gives you a top layer of dust and the wind kicks it up. There was one particular stage where you shot underneath a vehicle. And this particular match highlighted it, where they were encouraging kind of more tactical oriented guys to get out to competition with the way the divisions were formatted. They're very conducive to having duty grade handguns and equipment. And they're like, hey, shoot your SBR, shoot your suppressors. If you want to wear a plate carrier, by all means.
Fun.
And that really showed a difference where a lot of these dudes running suppressors, you know, had a really easy time shooting under this car where there's a lot of dust. It was a big advantage to be suppressed. And both me and Barry Duke were thinking, man, we wish we brought suppressors because we weren't planning on shooting.
Surefire. You guys are you make suppressors.
Yeah, we didn't bring any. Yeah, we learned our lesson. We'll bring some next year.
And one of the things about that is people go, well, you mean silencers? They just make things quiet. But another advantage that people may not consider.
Yeah, signature reduction. I mean, that was something that we branded for a while and we still push. It was just total signature reduction. It's not only the sound portion, which is good for just your ability to process information, communicate everything, you know, and your friends, your teammate, your family, whoever it may be that's nearby. But it's also your dust signature. Like you mentioned, when you shoot prone, it really reduces the amount of dust that's kicked up and the amount of concussion.
Yeah.
And also flash. Our suppressor specifically do a really good job at mitigating flash, and even more to that, first round flash, which a lot of people have problems with, which is that, you know, there's a little bit of oxygen built up in the suppressor the first time you shoot. And so there's always going to be a bigger pop there, but we do a really good job at mitigating that first round flash.
And that's a big deal for the military that you work with. I mean, it's still a good thing for those of us civilians, but maybe not as important, you know, for I'm just like wanting to be cool guy in the range or whatever.
It's still really nice to have. I mean, whether you're a hunter, a home defense, whatever.
Well, yeah, true.
But absolutely, that was a requirement. That was you know, one of the things that SOCOM had spec'd out as wanting an improved version of was reduction first round flash.
So wanted to talk. I mentioned you take a lot of classes as well, and I know you're kind of a student of shooting, and you've been working with a lot of top trainers. What are some of your favorite classes that you've done? And I didn't say who's the best, but what are for you personally?
That's a pointed question. I mean, you know, there's so many good firearms instructors out there. That's a really tough one, man. I think it would have to be, you know, narrowed down to a category. Cause yeah. like, if you're going to say, you know, for this specific thing, for, you know, I've taken a CQB course that was taught by Northern Red. That mm-hmm. was a phenomenal course. And, you know, we did, it's a reposed CQB course. So you do force on force. You're very yeah. familiar with
rifles and handguns.
Yeah, it was primarily, I mean, we had rifles and pistols, but it was primarily, rifle stuff.
Okay.
The specific class I was in was like a law enforcement tailored course that I was able to jump in on with a specific department near me. And, yeah, so it was, but the essence is not so much the manipulation of the firearms. It's more about the TTPs or, you know, the how you do CQB, right?
Right.
How they look at it. But that was a really excellent course. There's, you know, specific guys I'd want to go to for concealed carry. There's specific guys I'd want to go to for combatives, vehicle
sure.
stuff. I mean,
sure.
medical stuff. You know, like we had Bill Rapier out here one time.
Bill's a great guy.
Awesome, awesome guy. Really good package for combatives and concealed stuff. I mean, he has a really well thought out program for how that all integrates.
That would be nice for the regular guy. You mm-hmm. know, go, okay, concealed carry. Yep, I can use that. And probably not enough of us integrate the combative side of it because, let's be honest, the gun's not always the solution.
Yep.
Even though we all like to shoot, but that's probably, you know, it's the last resort.
And if you look statistically, I mean, you're probably more likely to get into a physical confrontation. I mean, mm-hmm. realistically speaking, as much as you don't want to acknowledge it, that's definitely something that you'd be benefited to be prepared for. I mean, and that's something that we're going to be talking, I believe, with Greg Lappin a little bit later from Vata Group. But yeah,
Greg's a good dude and has had a lot of variety of experiences. What's always interesting to me is if you go do a 2-3 day, whatever class, even if you have just a couple takeaways that you're like, that stuck with me. It's not that every single thing for 72 hours was just mind blowing, but it tunes you up and you have some takeaways. You've been through a lot of this stuff. I mean, are there takeaways when you think about the way you either set up your gear or the way that you would, you know, little shooting tips that, because a lot of times they'll go, just tweak your hand a little bit this way. And all of a sudden you're shooting the gun flatter or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just took a class a few weeks back, with a guy named Matt Pranka. He's a little bit newer in the training world. He retired out of the military, very high level in the military last year. But he's also a big competition advocate and he's a GM, in production division,
Grandmaster
USPSA. Yep. Yeah. Which is a big deal. And I mean, he's still active competitor as well. And in his class, he likes to refer to things as the top level shooters and the low level shooters. And I don't want to steal too much of his, but this is all 100% Matt Prank is saying, right? But what really to me stuck with me and what I kind of took away from his class was the perspective at which he looks at things, which again is the top level shooters, according to him, and you know, mid level shooters, the shooting speed isn't too much different. What is different is everything else. And so he talks about it and he refers to it as stealing time. If you can steal time from everything else, you can give it back to the shooting.
Mm.
Meaning if you can take time from your draw, if
sure.
you can cut time from your movement, if you can cut time from everywhere else, you can give that time back to the shooting.
Like at a basic level, I mean, I think about just standing there and being quick to draw maybe, but now you take a little extra half of a second, maybe even less than that, to just go, okay, press.
Exactly.
Break that shot.
Exactly. I mean, obviously it all depends on, you know, target size, target distance,
sure.
how much aiming does the target need? But that's the point, is that you can give that time back to the shooting. And that kind of just outlook on it, I guess perspective on it, really clicked with me and really helped. And then he demonstrated it through a variety of different scenarios in areas that you can steal time from. And I just thought that was really, really cool.
In the past, it seems like the tactical trainer guys would, and then the competition guys would, the tactical guys will go like, well, competition's not useful for shooting and tactics and that kind of thing. Like, that's not tactics, and vice versa. There was a little bit of a push and pull with those crowds. Do you think that's changing a little bit? I mean, you have a trainer who's saying, no, I'm a proponent of competition shooting.
I mean, absolutely. And I think that's something that, you know, people don't realize, that the highest, you know, form of the military, a lot of these guys have been going to the competition shooters for years, for over a decade, you know, and it's kind of like anything else, man. If I want to learn to dirt bike, I'm probably going to go to the best dirt bike guy in the world, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm not going to go to a military dirt bike guy, I'm going to go to a professional that's dirt biking, and you're segmenting those two things. You're isolating skills. So you got to look at, you know, tactics as one thing and then just shooting as one thing.
Right.
And that gets convoluted a lot in the tactical world, where they look at competition shooting and they say, like what you said, that's a game. We know where all the targets are. It's not applicable. It's not real. I think it's a lot of ego, and people don't want to put their name on the line and get beat. And the truth of the matter is, you're just isolating the skill of shooting fast and accurate in competition shooting. And that's what we all want to do. Segment that, you isolate that skill, and then you can bring on the tactics portion of whatever it is you're doing, whether it's concealed carry or whether it's a military job. But I think that's probably the best way to look at it. And, you know, you shouldn't really probably be delving into the tactics portion until you have a decent foundation for shooting skills. And competition's a really, really good place to hone that.
Well, I know you know, but for people listening, the very top competition shooters, they get hired to train the elite military units.
Yeah.
I mean, here and abroad. And they'll say, look, I know how to shoot fast and accurately. And most of the competition guys will go, look, I'm not a tactics guy. That's your world. But I can show you how to shoot fast and accurately, and that's my game. And at any cost, right? Because I don't have to worry about people shooting back at me. So this is kind of how I would do it. What's interesting also is on the gear side. So, and I know I've said this before, but the competitors who shoot open class stuff. So basically you're given the green light of whatever you can do to the gear to shoot as fast and as accurately as possible, you can do. Well, guess what they start doing? They start putting magwells. They start putting red dots on pistols, and they've been doing that for decades. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with the elite military folks, and especially them. They go, look, I don't care if it's pink and has a unicorn on it. If it'll help me shoot faster, more accurately, save my life, save my buddy's life, I'll put it on the gun.
Count me in.
Yeah, totally in. This Gun Talk Nation is brought to you by Safariland. Safariland has been known for super high quality gear, making stuff for law enforcement, military, but they make stuff for you as well. The 575 IWB holster, GLS ProFit holster. This is an inside the waistband holster, and it features their grip lock system, which secures the firearm once holstered. And you can be deactivated with the middle finger. So it kind of locks it all down. It's low cut, it's compact, it's concealable, and they have a bunch of different options for you when it comes to holsters. Safariland works with top competitors, and they're trusted by a lot of folks. Also, Gun Talk Nation is brought to you by Pyramid Air. These are the air gun people. They know what they're doing. Pellet guns, BB guns, whether it's for training, whether it's for hunting, and hey, they got a deal for you. All you have to do is enter Gun Talk Nation at checkout for $10 off any $50 purchase. So go check them out, Pyramid Air, that's two Ys, pyramidair.com, and enter Gun Talk Nation at checkout for a discount. Timney Triggers, they also support this show. And Timney Triggers is their biggest deal right now, we've said it before, is the new trigger for Glocks. They got it for Gen 3, Gen 4. And then they've got a trigger for the Gen 5 Glocks. And this is really a competition trigger. It's called the Alpha Competition, like, you know, Alpha Zone, A Zone, making those hits. This is easy to install. That's a big deal with Timney. And it's crisp. We've shot it. We've liked it. We appreciate their support. Go check them out. Timney Triggers.
My understanding, I think that's where, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that's where red dots came from with the rifle side as well. Was it's all from competition. I mean, it's like cars. Everything eventually has been a trickle-down effect from racing.
Yeah.
People wanting that absolute cutting edge, and then it trickles into the rest of us to benefit the rest of us. And I think that's the same thing. Competition breeds the, you know, absolute most refined equipment that can save a tenth here or whatever.
Right.
And that eventually gets trickled down into the general use category, which is pretty cool.
It's talking about lights on guns, weapon lights. We were talking earlier about the, honestly, the people who I know who take this stuff seriously, take their protection seriously, carrying or home defense or whatever it may be, they have lights on their guns, whether it's a long gun or a pistol or whatever. And when someone says, hey, Andrew, I've been carrying a little bit, but I don't know, do you really need a light on a gun? Because there are so many people who carry who probably don't have a light on their gun. I mean, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, at least you need a handheld. At the very minimum, I would say, if you're carrying a firearm, you definitely need a handheld. And that would probably be my choice first. Mm-hmm. But in a perfect world, absolutely, I'd want both. I think nowadays, like, we have that XSC, our new compact or micro compact pistol light. The XC1, also an awesome option for the midsize range. But regardless of the firearm size, generally speaking, we have a weapon light that'll fit it for concealed carry. And at that point, you're really at no sacrifice to carry the weapon light. And you're going to be extremely, there's a whole lot of benefits. The only con is really the cost.
Right.
And that's a buy once, cry once situation. You know what I mean? And how important is that scenario and doing well in it to you? But having a weapon light allows you to have both hands on the firearm, better control, better accuracy. I mean, everything is going to be more, is going to be better. Your manipulations, should you have a malfunction, should you need to reload, whatever it needs to be, or if it's just opening doors or doing other things, yep, you can still have an illumination tool on the firearm connected to it. Everything is greatly improved with having a weapon light.
Well, the XSC, and I'm saying that right? XSC is the real small one for those micro compacts that are so popular. So you've got it for the Hellcat, you've got it for the P365, and you've got it for the Glock, the G43?
Yep, the 43 and the 48 railed versions. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, each one of those. So the XSC, there's three versions, and there are the ones that you just mentioned, because each of those firearms manufacturers has a proprietary mounting rail on each gun. So right, you need to buy the right light for each one. But yeah.
That's important to note, yeah.
Yeah. All the Springfield Hellcats, all the P365s, the XL, the Standard, the optics version, and then the Glock 43 and 48 with accessory rail. But they're super compact. They're rechargeable, 350 lumens, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it's got a parabolic reflector that does a good job of getting a lot of mileage out of that amount of lumens. And for a concealed carry firearm, honestly, it's plenty of light. So that's an awesome little package. If you consider now, you know, the capacity you have with those guns, the fact that there's small red dots for those guns.
Oh yeah.
And now you have a really, really awesome, like, duty grade weapon light for those guns. I mean, there's a whole lot of capability in a very, very small package.
You got to think of it, talking about the coolness of that package. If you think back like 5, 6, 7 years, if you just took a picture with no reference, someone would say that, you know, if you didn't have like, you know, a hand or a dollar bill next to it, you'd go, that's a full size gun, right? It's got a red dot on it. It's got an optic. It's got a light. And oh, by the way, if you told them the capacity, mm-hmm, they're like, what's that? Like about a Glock 19 size gun? You're like, way smaller.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
It really is. It's an awesome, awesome thing that we've kind of pushed into this new area of capability in the industry. So yeah, they're all three of those guns are really, really cool.
I also like that you can hot swap out the batteries. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because they go, oh, well, I'm going to have to put new batteries in. No, it's rechargeable. And the battery comes off without the light coming off the gun. Is that right?
Yeah. So we had some early versions of another weapon light that was charge in place, meaning you could just plug a cable into the light itself and it would charge. And the theory being, like, you charge your iPhone at night, you know, mm-hmm, and that's good and well and sound. And in theory, you just charge it at night. But in reality, if you actually train with your firearms, which Surefire as a whole has always been a big advocate for encouraging our customers to train, having the right tool is one thing, knowing how to use it is a completely other thing. And it's very important to have both. So if you're actually going to train, which you should, with your weapon light, take a low light course, for instance, you're probably going to need more than one battery to get through. And so with that ability to hot swap, like you would a camera battery,
sure,
you can just pop one out. There's a dual bay charger that comes with that light, put it in the charger and take the one that was on the charger and put it back in the weapon light and keep training. You know, like, if it was charge in place, you're kind of out of luck there. You would need,
yeah, you have to stop
two lights or something. So yeah, that's really what it's for, is to be able to train with your light, which is extremely important to make sure you know how to use it when you need to use it.
I like it a lot. Talk about lights as a form of force, because we like to, you know, you turn on the lights in a room and the cockroaches run. And so the power of, and you guys were the first one to bring out lights that were super durable and super bright. We were just like blown away when Surefire started doing this stuff. And I've seen it. I know you've seen it when we're doing force on force stuff. When you light someone up with a light, not a gun, but actually light them up with a light, what does that do? What's the psyche of that?
Yeah. It's a huge force multiplier. I mean, you can look at it as an escalation of force, as a controlling tool, like law enforcement can, mm-hmm. you know, and a little bit, I'm stepping out of my wheelhouse just because.
I mean, I know you're not, I'm not trying to be a trainer.
The firearms trainer guy.
See, that's why I'm pushing it to you. I'm just making you say it.
Over the fence.
In theory, what I've been told.
Right. But you're right.
I know you're not a trainer, but you've worked with a lot of really good, experienced trainers. So you've learned from some of the best. I mean, some of the takeaways that you've gotten.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, we've seen it in force on force as well. I mean, it's a huge advantage when you take away being able to see from a fundamental standpoint. You know what I mean? It's a huge detractor in your capability and your sense of security. So when you do that to an aggressor, obviously they're going to be way less inclined to keep going and a lot of times be a lot more compliant or just want to flee in general. So if it's from a defensive standpoint, as soon as you put an extremely bright light, especially if it's obviously if you're turning a light on, it's already dark out, it's going to be a huge force multiplier for whether it's an end user, like a CCW guy or just walking at night.
Sure.
Or if it's law enforcement, you can gain a lot of control over somebody just by having a very bright light.
I think it's kind of like a gotcha, you know, like it could be you shine a light at someone and they're like, hey, how's it go? It's neighbor Bob. But you could also shine a light at somebody and they're like, oh, I thought I was being sneaky. Now it's like, crap.
Yep.
They got me here.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, everything is better again with having some light on whatever you're looking at. You're getting more information. Your eyes are able to collect more information. What's in their hands? What are they doing? Aside from the control standpoint, it can really help you positively ID on what's going on.
And probably potentially could be helpful in de-escalating things of you don't have to, maybe if it's a handheld, you don't even have to bring your gun out.
Yeah. I mean, I think, it was Gun Talk Radio that had a caller with a really good specific scenario where a weapon light was a big factor in helping him out.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's been several stories like that. And I have been personally the bad guy in force on force stuff with lights and lasers when all of a sudden a light is pointed at your face or a laser hits your chest and you go, oh, it's over. They got me.
Right.
It's kind of my honest reaction. I know I'm playing being a role player as a bad guy, but my honest reaction with it was like, okay, it's done. It would be silly of me to press forward and attack unless I was impaired.
Absolutely.
Judgment impaired or something.
Yeah. It's 100% a tool that you can use to de-escalate.
Mm-hmm.
And it is extremely effective at that. I mean, we've gotten so many stories from, you know, whether it's CCW individuals or military law enforcement where weapon lights are a huge advantage.
It made that difference.
Absolutely.
All right, let's make you pick between your kids. So handheld lights, you have a favorite or a couple favorites? People are going, well, okay, all right, fine, I need to have one. What's your favorite?
Yeah, mostly what I carry right here is the Stiletto Pro.
Don't point that thing at me, bro. It's powerful.
So
that's what I've got too.
Yeah. This is probably my favorite for the handhelds right now. Yeah. It's really slim. So it fits in the pocket nice and well, which means you're going to carry it. I think that's the first thing, you know, it does you no good if you don't carry it with you. So the form factor on this is number one. Really nice switching. The back of it, you know, you have that tactical tail cap that you can use in a tactical manner, and then it still has a bezel switch that you can cycle through low outputs with.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's micro USB rechargeable.
Rechargeable.
So that if you're using it on a daily basis, you know, which if you have it, you are.
Oh, yeah.
So convenient. So it's really nice to be able to top it off and not chew through batteries for a daily use light. So overall, I mean, this is my favorite handheld. It's 1,000 lumens. The parabolic reflector gives a decent amount of candela, but a really nice flood as well. So overall, really usable And probably my favorite handheld right now.
It's impressively bright for being not very big. And yeah, I'll drive somewhere, and if I think of it and it's daylight, I know it's not going to be like, or at least I can assume I'm not going to need it all of a sudden driving around in the daytime. I'll plug it in my truck and just let it charge wherever I'm going, then just stick it in my pocket and get a little juice it up a little bit.
100%.
It's awesome. It's very convenient.
Yeah, super, super convenient.
What else do they need to know? New stuff from Surefire right now, because they're going, okay, you guys make all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
What's another favorite?
Well, I mean, so on that note, Scout Light Pro, we launched that last year. Before I even go into the Scout Light Pro, though, we pushed back a bunch of our product launches this year, to be completely honest. We're experiencing an extreme amount of demand due to the climate right now, just like everyone else is in the industry. And so first and foremost, we're trying to appease our customers and catch up with the demand.
Make the basic stuff that everybody wants.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, several of our product launches got pushed back. We'll have a couple of them a little bit later this year, but we're just trying to catch up on our standard product lines first and foremost and appease our customers that have been waiting. So a lot of stuff back ordered and we're catching up. We're running three shifts, buying more machines. We just set up some new machines for the suppressor side this past week. So
I promise all the companies are trying to crank out as much as possible.
100%.
The government is not, you know, paying you to not make things. That's the crazy. And it's probably not as much on you guys, but like the ammo guys get accused of this.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, we're just trying to make ammo as much as possible.
100%.
You guys are buying it all. But the Scout Light Pro, super cool. And I love what you guys have done with the mounting options.
Yeah, that's the main thing with the Scout Light Pro. It has a new, what we call a low profile mount, LPM, fancy name. Basically, it's
got to have a three letter acronym. Right,
you have to. Basically, it is a swiveling mount based on one screw where the cleat, the part that attaches to the rifle, there's two options. It comes with both. One's for Picatinny, one's for M-Lock. So you can directly mount it to your M-Lock. You don't need an adapter. So a lot of times people are stacking adapters and then it's not as clean. It's not as low profile. And then with that screw that the mount swivels on, you can get the weapon light as tight to the rail of the firearm as possible. So it just reduces your overall profile.
Mm-hmm.
The less things sticking off your gun, the better. Whether it's, even if it's a defensive gun that you're pulling out of your trunk of your car, you don't want to get snagged on things, snagged on a seatbelt, home defense, it's just nicer to have a low profile package. And this enables you to have the most low profile package possible.
Very cool. Surefire has always been at the forefront of super cool products. Thanks for being with us, man.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Gun Talk Nation.